On this episode of Japan 2.0.
I was pretty shocked at how much more I enjoyed the trip to Seoul than the trip to Tokyo.
That's a big surprise.
Yeah, I mean, it was like hands down way, way better in Seoul. Mystical world of game and wonder, arcade centers like no other, nostalgia, yeah, every moment, everything you see when I jump all on it, damn, walking through these halls, my childhood is written on these walls, I breathe the air deep down, I know this place is where I belong, my destiny, my wildest dream, my fantasy, my inspiration and my energy, everything up to this point, this place has led me, yeah, there's a place that's better, my fascination can't go on forever, so real, like a faded meeting with a friend who knew straight from beginning. Hello and welcome to Japan 2.0. This is David.
And this is Matt. And we're a little bit, I feel more quiet
than usual. We're not in the library.
We're not in the library. We're in a cafe.
We're in a salon.
Yeah.
Salon Diamanto is the name of this place.
Diamanto.
Diamanto.
How,
check my pronunciation there.
Oh, yeah. I thought it was really good.
And it's a really cool kind of bohemian cafe in Nakazakucho. A cool bohemian neighborhood in northern Osaka, and yeah, we're kind of just here. I think we're calling this one summer 2019, just kind of give an update. It's late July.
Yeah, it seems like every summer we meet up and we do end up doing a podcast about just like what we've been up to and how we've been and stuff. And a lot of times, you know, it's not until summertime that David and I get together and are able to really talk about like new ideas and things like that.
Yeah, we see each other, you know, like once a month is usually what we meet, but like around big vacations.
So yeah, and it can't always be business, you know, like, you know, doing the podcast is a lot of fun, but it also is, you know, it takes time and it takes effort and stuff. And so sometimes, you know, we just want to hang out and enjoy, you know, each other's company. So, you know, there are days like this where we decide to sit down and like regroup and talk about what we've been up to. And actually, since summer started, we really haven't had a chance to hang out much. Yeah,
come out with our families, but it's our first time hanging out one-on-one.
Yeah,
and yeah, it feels good. We've been doing lots of exciting stuff, and yeah, we're here to talk about it. We'll talk a little bit about personal, what's been going on, and kind of what's been going on in Japan too.
Yeah. Yeah, so I guess to set it off is, you know, we're both on summer vacation from our jobs.
About 2 months off.
Yeah, we're both international school teachers. I started at an international school a couple of years ago, and this feels like it's my first.
It is your first, because last summer you were doing a master's program online, so you're still pretty busy, right?
Yeah, so I didn't get much of a summer last year, and this year it just feels great. You know, I'm finally catching up on a lot of things that I've been meaning to do around the house. So a lot of things that I've been doing is I've been going to IKEA and, you know, furniture shopping and stuff like that. I know, really exciting stuff.
It's pretty shocking to me how prevalent IKEA is in Japan, though. Like, don't you feel like it's a bigger deal here than it is back in the States?
Yeah, I was fortunate. I got to go during the weekday because I know it gets packed on the weekends. But even during the week, it was still pretty busy. I've never been a big IKEA person, so
Same here. So
to be honest, I haven't spent a lot of time in IKEAs.
I'm judging it by, like, when I'm in the States, I very rarely go to someone's house and I'm like, oh man, you like IKEA? Like, this is decked out in IKEA, you know? Because, like, in college, it is something that you kind of have to do, right? And in college, I did see it a lot. But after college and going to friends' houses and things like that, I don't really see a lot of IKEA stuff. Sadly, I can recognize it all, which shows you my past. And but when I'm in Japan, I do Airbnb a lot. Maybe it's just an Airbnb thing where people are just getting the cheapest possible thing in there. But I see IKEA stuff everywhere. I go to cafes here, and I'm like, oh, that's a Kallax, or that's a insert Swedish word here. I'm always recognizing the furniture from IKEA around Japan.
Well, I think there are two chains, you know, that are, I think, the most popular for budget furniture, and that's Nitori, which is basically, we call that the Japanese IKEA. And then IKEA. And one of the things about IKEA that, you know, I like, and the reason why we keep going back, is that, for one, they have delivery, so they'll deliver it to your house, so you don't have to, like, lug everything. I mean, you couldn't lug it on the subway, some of the stuff that we've ordered, you know, those big closets and stuff. The other thing is that, you know, when you live in Japanese apartments, you're living in a small apartment, and it's not easy to move all your stuff, you know. So if you plan on moving, and my wife and I have talked about, you know, considering moving in the future, and I didn't want a whole bunch of stuff that was going to be, like, really hard to move and, you know, like, permanent.
You feel you can just toss IKEA stuff and cry too much?
If you have to, you have to, you know. Or you could also take it down and then rebuild it, right? Which would be a pain, but you could still do that.
I really wonder if IKEA stuff could hold up if you, like, take it. I feel like if I took it apart, you wouldn't screw it back in.
Yeah, some things would not last.
I think I don't want to get on IKEA too much here, but I think one reason why IKEA works so well in Japan, why it is popular here, is, like, there's many kinds of Japanese design, and I don't want to, like, get you on the whole Marie Kondo that it's all about simplicity, because I think that's a bit of a misnomer about Japan, is that a lot of places are really convoluted and cluttery as well. But there is that one kind of Japanese aesthetic or design, and it is really clean and simple, and I think IKEA kind of matches with that part of Japan.
I think with young people, or, you know, that seems to be pretty popular. We saw a lot of young couples, you know, in there. And I mean, once again, it's a lot of people's, you know, getting their first place for the first time, you know, and probably starting out their lives together.
You know? So anyway, IKEA's in Japan, in case you wondered, and it's pretty popular.
And just so you know, they don't call it IKEA, they call it IKEA.
I think that's the proper way to say it. You know?
Is it IKEA?
Yeah, I think, like...
But Americans call it IKEA?
Yeah, for sure. Okay. Yeah, so that's always a conundrum for me in life, is, like, once I know the proper way, like, do you say it, sound pretentious, or, you know, what do you do?
Yeah, one of my coworkers said, what are you talking about? IKEA.
I couldn't even understand you.
They said it was sounded cool, but yeah.
Where are they from?
Japan. Oh, okay. Yeah, Japanese. Right. Yeah, coworker.
Yeah, no, IKEA. I think closer to the Sweden.
Yeah, the Swedish meatballs, man. Get the Swedish meatballs.
They got
meatballs.
It all here. Yeah. It feels like you're, like, anywhere else in the world.
Yeah.
That's cool. Anything else? Any traveling, going to new neighborhoods, or new places you always want to hit?
Not really, you know. I've been staying home a lot, you know. I've been...
You only come to Suma Beach once, right?
Yeah, I came to Suma... I went to Suma Beach once. Yeah, I got to go out there again. I've been staying close to home, saving money. I went to the doctor. I'll talk about this a bit.
Okay, yeah.
So I went to the doctor for an annual health check. And, you know, I got some blood tests. And if you've ever been to a Japanese doctor, if you're interested, you know, it's kind of an interesting situation. It's almost like a spa out here, where they have you change into, at least the doctor I go to, they have you change into a robe, put on slippers.
I don't, yeah.
And
I don't do that. They come to my work once a year, and it's mobile. It's a truck.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And they, like, unpack in our school, so they'll be in certain buildings in the school.
Yeah.
But then there's, like, this mobile truck you have to go to do certain things.
So, oh, okay.
Yeah, we wear our own clothes. I think girls aren't allowed to wear, like, bras or something, but, yeah, it's, no, besides that, it's pretty normal.
This one's pretty wild. It has, like, the robes there for you, and then they have a wristband, so you can put your things in a locker and wear, like, this wristband, and it's kind of like the...
is it through your school onsen, or just the normal place?
This is through our school.
Okay.
It's a new meta, and, yeah, they take your, you know, your blood pressure, just, and they put you in a booth, and they have you do the hearing test, and then you do the eye test. It's all, like, almost the same stuff. They always get really nervous when I go to get my blood taken. Okay. They're like, how do you do it, you know, or how do you do it? Like, are you gonna freak out when
they're really concerned about that here.
Yeah, which
I thought I just had a reputation at my school because it's the same people coming every year, you know.
Yeah,
I've passed out in the past.
Oh,
but
okay,
hearing you say that too makes me think, oh, I must.
Yeah. I think they're concerned, you know, because maybe the communication isn't so good, and so, you know, and it's kind of a sensitive situation.
Yeah.
So, but I just told them, you know, I don't look, you know, as long as I don't have to look, then I'm fine,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And so I got all that done, and the doctor, he saw me, and he said, hey, you're A-okay, you're doing all right, and your eyesight is good, your hearing's good, you know, all this stuff.
Your hips
and,
are good.
Yeah, and he said your weight's okay for your body size and all that stuff. But maybe like a week ago, I got a letter in the mail, big letter in the mail, And I opened it up.
It's the report card.
Yeah, it's the report card. And the funny thing is they used like an alphabet grade.
Yeah, I'm not joking when I say report card.
It's like A to A, B, C, D. And I got straight A's except for cholesterol. So actually right now, I know we just released a hamburger episode of the podcast, but as of right now, I'm not going to be eating hamburgers
for a long time.
Well, not regularly anyway. So yeah, they said I got a grade C in cholesterol, and the doctor said, you know, do more exercise. So I've really started, you know, eating healthily. Yeah. And I know we've brought it up in the past, like, you know, we've said that, like, it's kind of a misconception that Japanese food is really healthy. Yeah. Like, because when you go out to eat, it's all fried, right?
Yeah,
it's
for
like
sure.
Fried pork or fried, you know, chicken or fried, you know. Yeah.
We just tried, I mean, we just ate lunch at a healthy place. And granted, there's more healthy options than others, but even me going there, like, the main course was karage with mayonnaise on it, you know?
Yeah.
And everything else was super healthy and vegetables, but this is it. You're always going to get fried food or mayonnaise. Yeah. Like, it's so hard to avoid those two.
Yeah, I've been trying to cut out a lot of fried food, but even this was, like, fried fish, you know. But I got my fish. I'm supposed to eat more fish, so.
The Japanese doctors. The annual health check thing is cool. I kind of like it. I mean, that's how I found my tumor that I had in Iowa. If you're more interested in this topic, I think there's probably cancer is the title you could search.
Yeah, go back to that episode.
I did like a 2 or 3-parter on the whole experience of getting a tumor removed in Japan. So
yeah,
that's always fun.
Yeah, I've come to realize though it's not so easy to find like healthy food options
eating at home.
Yeah,
I think Japanese home cooked dinners are really healthy, but for whatever reason. I don't know what it is, but it's harder. You have to work hard to find healthy places here.
I will say that I thought it would be harder to go on a healthy diet than it has been because there's so many Japanese foods that are really healthy that I do like. So I've been eating a lot of natto, you know, which is like the fermented beans, a lot of miso soup, a lot of, you know, fish. Mm. I started eating brown rice, which is a big... I hate brown rice. Yeah, I used to hate it.
I like it.
But now I started eating it. I'm mixing it with white rice. So I'm slowly transitioning. Yeah. And I feel a little bit better. Not great yet, you know, but
I always remember we did a day in the life episode. And Matt, I think your section opened with you, like, panting from, like, running. You're recording yourself running in the morning. Because I think that was the first time you got the cholesterol warning.
Yeah, maybe.
Shortly after that, so.
I could have been running, though, because sometimes I have to run for my train.
Oh, no. You were working out in a park, for sure.
Oh, okay. Yeah, maybe.
That's cool. Anything more fun? Doctors and furniture shopping at IKEA, or?
More fun, I don't know. I guess not really. If I think of something, I'll bring it in.
Yeah, today is the best day.
Yeah, today has been a cool day. It's been nice to get out and get... you know, into a meta and check out Nakazakicho a little better because we've always wanted to really like this neighborhood and just have always had
I think recently I've turned the bend and I would say it's one of my favorite neighborhoods in Osaka, but it took a while.
Yeah
But look out for that more later. We're doing a whole episode on that, so.
Yeah, we'll talk about this neighborhood in detail.
Tokyo and to Seoul, my two favorite places in the world.
Yeah.
So it's been cool to do that within like a month from each other, and kind of impossible, I think, not to compare the two, doing them so close to each other. I should say that I went to Tokyo with just my wife without my child, and then I went with my sister-in-law and my son to Seoul, so kind of different trips. And for me, it was my first time traveling without my son, so I was kind of more excited to go to Tokyo just to like have some selfish time for a couple of days. And the Seoul trip to me was God, I had more concerns as a father, you know?
Yeah.
I was pretty shocked at how much more I enjoyed the trip to Seoul than the trip to Tokyo.
Oh, that's a big surprise.
Yeah, I mean, it was like hands down way better in Seoul. And I think probably a lot of that is since the last time I've gone to Seoul, I went to Seoul last probably 5 years ago, I've gone to Tokyo like, I don't know, 15 times or something since then. You know? So it's like going somewhere 10 to 15 times versus one time, and hopefully that other place is going to be more exciting. But I mean, I lived in Seoul for a long time, and I lived in Hongdae, that neighborhood, for a couple months before. So yeah, I mean, it's nothing too crazy exciting, but
it's kind of like going back to your old stomping grounds, though. Because how long had it been since the last time you were in Seoul?
I think 5 years.
Five years. So yeah, it would be about almost 6 years for me.
Yeah. So the neighborhood we stayed in was called Hongdae, and it was always like our favorite spot to hang out in. You know, it's kind of the artsy neighborhood of Seoul, and it was a pretty significant place. This is where I met my wife as well. Mm. So we were really happy to see him. One thing you kind of have to know about Korea, I would say, like, it's hard to compare from the 5 years I was there last, but I can compare it from like 7 years ago was the last time I lived there, I think 6 or 7 years. I would say 95% of the establishments in Hongdae are gone, are different. It's like the buildings are there. You can recognize the place from like the structure of the streets and the architecture. But if you are the kind of person that like looks at a shop sign to remember somewhere, like it can feel totally different, you know?
Yeah.
So it's kind of really interesting to see what's stayed and what's gone. And for me, it's kind of a real travesty of Korea is that exists. Like, you'll have a favorite restaurant or cafe, and it's a land of the trends, you know? Like,
if a trend pops up,
it's kind of more like, I want bubble tea, and you don't have a particular favorite bubble. Like, you just go for bubble tea, or you just go for a certain kind of mandu. And even like Korean food, I think, has changed. Like, there's a lot of trends within Korean food that weren't there before, you know? Mm-hmm. Like these rainbow colored hot dogs that are everywhere, you know? They're in Japan now too, but they came from there. You know, or just like the sauce chicken, you know? Like boneless sauce chicken in a cup. That was like when I first lived there, that didn't exist. And by the time I left, that was like everywhere. That's still everywhere. Tater tots and like barbecue sauce chicken in a little cup for like $3 or $4. You know, those are everywhere. They're so good. So that was the first kind of initial shock was like, man, what's here that I like still? And like kind of letting go of that, realizing you have to kind of find new places and it can't all be like a nostalgia trip, you know?
I remember, you know, we did a podcast called Two Crew Mon Dudes. I don't think it exists on the internet anymore.
It doesn't exist anymore. Yeah. I think you can find like some blog posts, but you can't find the actual podcast.
Yeah.
If you're curious, let us know. I've given some listeners, we have a Google Drive folder that I've shared with some people, but
okay,
if you want that,
yeah,
it's a long term project. Maybe one day I'll put them back up again, but I don't know, it's getting so dated that
yeah, I don't know where they'd go. Like, could we do it off weeks, you know, in Japan 2.0 feed? And, yeah. I don't know.
I just,
you
know, going with what I just said, I wonder if anything's relevant anymore, but
yeah, well, part of the reason why I was bringing it up is because I feel like when we were doing the podcast, we used to talk about this a lot, how like trends would change and how places would be open for just a short period of time, especially if you lived in the suburbs. Mm. You know, places would be trying to like follow the trends, and so they'll open up a shop, and then a month later that shop is gone, you know?
Yeah, so fast.
Yeah, and sometimes it could have, like, the first couple of days, it had lines out the door, you know, it seemed really popular, and then it was gone, like, overnight.
Yeah.
And, I don't feel like Japan's that way, you know, at least here in Kansai, you know, it seems like things stick around for a while. Mm. Now I've been here long enough that where I'm starting to notice some of my favorite places, you know, or some places in the neighborhood are closing, but I'm sure they've been around for 5 or 6 years, you know?
Yeah.
I don't think the turnover is quite as fast as it is in Korea.
No, I don't. I mean, things stay out a really long time here. There's no comparison.
Yeah.
I was kind of surprised about like a lot of, like new generations today, right? There's like this Instagram culture for like the trendy stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
And my generalization or stereotype is that like Koreans are really into that. And part of that has to do with maybe the tourists I see coming here. But Hongdae is kind of such a special place, and I kind of want to touch on like what a special place in the world it is, you know. And I think we use it, at least I use it for sure, as like a point of relevancy for anything we talk about in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, this podcast is probably for like the big fans only, you know. We're not really talking about any big Japan topics here, but like if you kind of really want to know like the kind of backbone of our analysis of Japan, or when we're talking about Japan, I think knowing about this experience Matt and I had in Hongdae, one of our favorite neighborhoods, first time we were DJ together, and like your regular DJ spot was out there, which is gone, by the way.
Yeah.
You have to kind of know how we felt about this neighborhood, because for me going there again was kind of like a reminder of there's nowhere in Japan that is like that concentratedly cool or artsy, or and the people that go there are really different from the Korean tourists that I'm seeing out here in Japan. Like when I was out in shops and stuff like that, no one took pictures of anything there. Like, and granted, I was, you know, going to like the really eccentric bohemian kind of bars and cafes and stuff, but there was no one taking pictures of their food. There was no like lines, and like again, people like blogging about it in the line or anything like that. Which we kind of see a lot of that out here if you go to, like, the bubble tea places or these trendy places.
Sure.
In Hongdae, nah, man, like, yeah, people were on their phone, like, texting a friend or something, but it wasn't, like, the whole social media culture that I kind of expected, and it made me really happy that Hongdae still kind of has that feeling that it used to have. And towards the end of my time going there, it used to be, like, tour buses just dropping tourists off there, you know? And I thought I was going to go back, and it was going to be, like, just Myeongdong or just Gangnam or any other place in Seoul.
Yeah.
But nah, I see way more tourists out here in Osaka than in Hongdae. Granted, I mean, there were some. I was one, for example. I know there's this whole hypocritical nature of, like, being a tourist but also wanting to be in places where tourists aren't there, you know?
Yeah.
But no, it felt really underground and artsy still. And a lot of the cool Hongdae stuff is kind of moved towards Hapsheong Station, which is, like, a major transit hub.
Yeah.
So the areas in between like Songsu Station or Hongguk Station and Hapsheong Station, which is like a 15-minute walk, those are kind of the cooler spots that are just really quiet, felt undiscovered. Just the amount of stuff there in a couple of blocks, you know? I mean, I kind of have to take Tokyo and choose these neighborhoods that are sometimes 30 minutes apart and put all that together.
Yeah.
To kind of create a place that's that concentratedly, like, Liz and I were laughing at like a bar we just walked by and it looked awesome, but like we knew in our, if I was gonna live there for a year, I would never go to that bar, mm-hmm. because there's just so many other places better
to go.
Yeah. But if that place was in Kobe, it'd be the coolest bar there, like the number one. So like the absolute coolest place in Kobe.
Yeah.
And it's a place that I wouldn't go to in a year in Hongdae. I'm just talking about the look, the feel of a place. Who knows, maybe you go in there and the food blows you away, right?
Yeah.
Or same with, you know, Kobe. Maybe the food in Kobe is so amazing. I'm just talking about, like, no one does kind of cool, artsy, like, Hongdae that I've seen.
Yeah, I think Hongdae is always going to succeed. And this is just based on, this is pure, like, speculation and on my part, because I don't know for sure, but I think that there's always going to be art there, and there's always going to be artistic people there, just because if you've done a travels across Korea, there's no other place like it, right?
Yeah.
It's the only place where people like entrepreneurs and stuff would come in and start a restaurant that is artistic or a little bit outside of the norm. The big art, the art college is there, you know, and I think that has a lot to do with it. So it attracts like artistic people, and then artistic people want to stay, and artistic people want to be around artistic people, you know? I mean, you name any other place in Korea, in any major city that you've ever been to, you know, and is there any place that compares at all, you know?
Yeah, there's nothing. In terms of size, there's Shinsadong has a certain street that kind of has that feel, and then there's Samcheongdong. Yeah. I've not been to those places in a long time, but I heard when I was there, those are still kind of cool spots too. But yeah, Hongdae is just so, I mean, we stayed there. I never left. I never got on the train to go anywhere else in 5 days. And
yeah, you could spend the whole time there and always find something new or and have a great time, you know? And that's one nice thing about Hongdae. But I mean, comparing it to any other place, you know, it's hard to do because it is such a concentration.
That being said, like,
and
any
it's the
other
only place.
Yeah, and which is a problem too, yeah. Right? If you're not in Hongdae, then it's like, there is nothing like that. Where I think Japan does a better job of I'm no one's masterminding this or anything, but in Japan, the cool places are kind of spread around, right?
Right, right.
So you'll be in that kind of pop area that's full of franchises, and you duck down an alley and you find, you know, some really cool place.
Yeah.
For sure. No, no, it's...
And you could be in any major city, you know, and find a place that's really cool, you know, where...
It kind of keeps you hopeful and always looking. I think, I remember you and I talking on the Korean podcast about this, actually, which is like... If you're not in Hongdae, you're not in one of those other places I mentioned, it's like, what's the point to even go down the alley and, like, explore? Because, like, you know the chances. It's like finding a needle in a haystack in Korea, where we talked about our trips out here before we really knew everything about Japan. We knew, you know, much less than we know now. And just, like, every alley, doesn't matter where you are, if you're in Sapporo or somewhere, I think you'd find cool artsy stuff, you know?
Yeah. Or in this neighborhood, like we were saying, you know, we didn't know it that well, but even today we went into a little place that we'd never noticed before, and it's kind of out of the way, down an alley, you know, up some stairs, and it was a really cool, good lunch, you know? So, and this place is really, really awesome, too. So, this cafe that we're in, so... Yeah.
One kind of closing thing I want to say about a big difference was I think they really ran with that alternative culture in Hongdae and to kind of some extreme. So, like, I would say I'd spend about 8 hours a day just walking around there, and I would see on average of like five people with like full face tattoos there. So, like, tattoos were a trend that were starting when we left there, but now people are like fully covered.
In tattoos.
Yeah, and I did walk a little. I said I didn't really get on the train to go outside of Hongdae much, but I did walk pretty far, like an hour outside of Hongdae one day, and I didn't notice. I don't think that's like a Korean trend in general. I feel like that's kind of a Hongdae. Facial piercings as well. So I don't know what you call these things, but I think they're like implants or something. Like you get like a piercing like on your cheek, like near your eye, you know? So many people had those too. Like really alternative, like nose piercings, of course, and lip piercings and all that.
Yeah.
But, pretty like full in like alternative look.
Well, where else are you gonna work and do your business outside of Hongdae, you know? If you make that kind of a commitment, right?
And a lot of the people were like such just I mean my wife is alternative looks, I don't want to say like normal, but they looked like not that extreme, like I don't know how to put it. They just looked like a really like young, like nice clean cut Korean boy, and he's got face tattoos, and it's like, oh man, like
wearing the suit and the you know, that kind of stuff.
Not even that. Like, just wearing, like, a polo and some khakis and, like, looks like he's going to go golf later, you know? Like, he's got face tats and, like, his nose septum pierced. And,
that was always the Korean style, though. I mean, you know, they are always a lot more conservative with, like, their look, you know? And
that's what I'm saying is, like, right now my wife has purple hair, I have bleach blonde hair, and like when we go around, you know, some people look at us in general in Japan, and we were just chopped liver, and we're like, we're the most normal basic people there, you know?
People are getting pretty wild.
It's pretty, yeah, it's really, really full on, like, guys, girls, doesn't matter. So guys, it's not like, even after 5 or 6 days of seeing it, we still every time I was like, man, that person's like just fully, because again, they don't necessarily have the fashion or like the look for it, you know? Like, I don't know, I'm gonna be cliche here, but like a leather jacket and they were wearing like very like preppy clothing and then like fully tatted up, and like
I think that is the Korean fashion though, style, you know?
Yeah, that to me was really interesting. And I think Japan has this history of tattoos and punk music, and people would think that you'd see that more here, but no, like way more in Hongdae, like 100 times more. It's crazy.
It's kind of similar in Japan. It depends on where you are. When you're in Tokyo, I see a lot more of, like, you know, the alternative looks and like people dressed up. Here in Umeda and in Amerikamura in Yotsubashi and those neighborhoods, you see a lot more people with like dyed hair, tattoos, and street fashion, you know. But I think generally, like in Japan, people are pretty conservative as well, like, you know,
I think
in
so
those
too.
Places,
I think they're,
and in Korea, I mean, if you went outside of Hongdae and went outside of Seoul, I think you're gonna find people being very conservative in their fashion.
Also, like LGBTQ plus. What is it?
I think you're there.
Okay.
Very
Hongdae, at least.
I don't want to say it incorrectly. Yeah. So,
I can't speak for Seoul, but Hongdae, at least, is very in that direction now, too, where you see a lot of alternative couples, and which is cool. Before, it was always, you know, Itaewon at night times, like the place to go for that. but we see people very openly, you know, holding hands and kissing and stuff there, and a lot of like bars that we went to before. Mm-hmm. We went to the Ska, which is very different now, but
no, yeah. Madonna anymore, right?
No more Madonna.
Oh, yeah. No, too bad.
But he kind of set the tone, I think, in leaving that. Yeah, it was all walks of life, you know, very open and welcoming, and it was cool to see that too. So
yeah,
it's changed very quickly, I think, and there's nowhere in Japan I can think of was like that.
Now, you experienced some of the nightlife. Did you feel like it's still as crazy as it was, or do you feel like
crazy
things have changed?
Yeah, I don't know if crazy is the right word, but
it was really booming when we used to go to Ska, or we go to
sure. Yeah, I mean, the very first night there, Liz and I went out, and we went to like a lot of our old haunts, mm-hmm. and it was the most fun night I've had since I was in Korea last. Like, so much fun,
you can't
like just laughing
the
whole time, and
stuff, yeah.
So much to look at and see, and because you just bounce in places and you never have to pay a fee.
Yeah, you know, that's one thing that Japan definitely does wrong in comparison is their sitting fees are always, and you never know what kind of sitting fee you're gonna get. So
right.
The sitting fee might be 1,000 yen or it might be 300 yen.
Yeah, it's something that we heard a Korean once say, clubby bar. I don't know if that's the actual phrase, but
clubby bar.
There are these things where, like, I'm not really a club kind of person. I'm not going to really go to just a club. Obviously, bars are cool, but they have just so many bars that have, like, a little dance floor that you can do your bar thing and be quiet and just sit and have drinks, or you can, like, go dance. And I never really intend to, hey, let's go dance, but oftentimes you're at a bar and a good song comes on and you just get up and dance, you know, and it gets you dancing. Where that just doesn't exist here, you know. I can't think of a place I've ever been to that really has that. I mean, they have special nights at certain bars, but this is literally on a Tuesday night or Wednesday night, a lot of these, you know. So much fun, like, and it's funny being back at those old places again and everyone, you know, looking young and stuff, and
yeah,
that was pretty interesting. But yeah, you know, it's, I guess it's wild still. Yeah, 1 a.m. 2 a.m. even on a Wednesday night in Hongdae. It was pretty crazy still.
Oh, it's cool.
So
yeah,
yeah, it hasn't lost that feeling.
I do miss that. Yeah,
live music everywhere, street performances, like,
well, the park is amazing for that.
Yeah, that was pretty dead. I don't know if that was indicative of the overall or if we just went there on a bad night.
Yeah,
but there's that street people call Picasso Street. That's just like, yeah, 10 street performers from Poppin' Lockers, like, want to be K-pop boy band groups,
rappers,
you know, to magicians,
yeah,
still whatever.
You never know what you're gonna get.
And again, this is like Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday.
Mockley guy.
I didn't see him. I was really sad. I was looking for him.
He's a legend.
But yeah, I mean, this show's mostly about Japan, but I would recommend to take a trip if you come out to Japan. It's like an hour and a half flight to Seoul, and if you like the artsy stuff that we talk about, yeah, Hongdae is a pretty amazing place. So
yeah,
look it up, check it out.
Before we, you know, started to do some remodeling in our house, we were considering going to Korea as well. And I was looking at tickets, and it's cheaper to travel to Seoul than
to
it
Tokyo.
Is to go to Tokyo
or
anywhere
amount,
else.
Almost
yeah.
the same amount of time, too.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's super cheap. If you come here and you get a flight on Peach Airlines, or what'd you take?
Took Korea Air, actually.
Korea Air?
I don't know. I did. My wife bought it all, but it was, I want to say, like $200 a person.
Yeah, it's dirt cheap, so,
yeah.
Yeah, I'll be going. I'm
you
sure
gotta
I'll
go.
Be going
you,
soon.
I'll and, talk with you off mic a bit, but you gotta go. It's
yeah,
it's so much fun.
I definitely want to go to our old stomping grounds as well, and yeah. I think that would be interesting because, I think you've been in Hongdae the whole time, and
yeah.
I'd be interested to see what, like, life outside of Hongdae is looking like because
yeah.
things change so quickly. Like, I remember living, when I lived there, like, in 1 year, like, this huge neighborhood was built, like, right beside, you know, the city I lived in.
Yeah.
It was, like, mansions, you know, like, huge buildings.
Mm-hmm.
And then some of those places have become ghost towns, and nobody lives in those buildings and stuff. So, like, there's a lot of interesting change that happens in that country.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm excited for you to go and talk about it on the podcast.
Yeah, yeah. We'll do a follow-up.
Yeah. So maybe we'll take a break and come back with some current events.
Yeah, yeah. Let's do it.
All right. And we're back. And I feel like there's been kind of a lot going on in Japan lately. I mean, there always is. The Olympics, we're always talking about that. I think that's kind of driving certain things or giving Japan more international press. But and kind of less positive things, there was a really big fire that happened last week, was it?
Yeah, it was in a Kyoto animation studio.
Yeah. To be honest, I'd never heard of this animation studio, but apparently they had a kind of a cult following.
I think, you know, if you're into anime, you've probably seen something that they've done, you know.
It's literally called Kyoto Animation, right?
Yeah. And I think Ichiban Studio or something like, okay. Studio One or something like that. But, yeah, I mean, it was a very unfortunate event where a very troubled person went inside the building and poured gasoline and then lit the building on fire and tragically killed 34, I think it's 34 people right now.
34 now, yeah.
And people are still recovering from their burns. They did catch the perpetrator.
Yeah.
Which is good because, I mean, it's always good to, I believe it's good to have them, to find out what.
Did you hear why he did it?
He said they stole his novel. Yeah, they stole his
copyright novel.
Yeah, we'll see what comes of that.
I mean, clearly someone who mass murders people isn't right in the head, but, this guy's background also confirms that, like, he's a bit off.
Yeah, I haven't read much about him. Like, when I read about it, it was
that's right one of the things,
after it happened, right?
That's one of the differences with Japan reporting is they tend to keep that stuff they keep it in private, you know?
Yeah.
And it's not until, like, way later a lot of that stuff comes out. So, yeah, they don't, there hasn't been a lot about him, but it's just that he wrote to them before and said, you're stealing my novel, and he was screaming, like, die and stuff when he was in there. People could hear that.
Yeah.
But the imagery sounds really horrific, like what neighbors describe, people jumping out. And they're really, like, great. Japan, oftentimes, the work environment's not very good, especially in the animation industry. It's, like, one of the worst.
Yeah.
And this place is really well known for, like, hiring a lot of women, like, trying to do, like, a lot of equality in their hiring, getting, like, better hours than normal, and being kind of, like, at the forefront of a lot of Western practices in business. And it's pretty sad that, of all places, that this place
was targeted, yeah. Definitely our hearts and go out to, like, everybody who was affected and, all the families that are affected. I mean, this is, in Kyoto, it's not far from home. Yeah, so,
it's a place we go to all the time.
It's really tragic to hear something like this happen. And, but it tends to be, like, a bit of a trend in Japan, as of late. And I think probably the Olympics has a lot to do with it, and the G20 summit was here not too long ago.
Yeah.
And during that time, there were a lot of police out and a lot of police at all the stations, like standing on these soapboxes, holding these staffs and watching, like, the crowds. And I think that Japan probably doesn't want, like, bad PR right now, and these kind of events have been happening a lot.
A lot of people don't agree with I mean, no one's come out and said anything to do with the Olympics, but a lot of people don't agree, the Olympics, no matter where they are in the world. I feel like in the last 20 years they're always controversial and a lot of local people hate them.
Yeah.
I'm not
blaming the Olympics myself. But I'm just saying that, like, when this sort of thing happens, I think people do get a little nervous when, big international events are happening, or international festivals or things are going on, right?
One of the reasons I want to move to Japan, I remember, like, my dad was never really for the idea of me moving here, And so, like, the classic big, I used to be a big researcher, so I always, like, collect data, and show them, like, make these, like, poster presentations of, like, why I wanted to move to Japan, seriously.
Oh, and, I believe it, man.
I used to, just, like, say, like, these mass killings and stuff don't, this was even back in, like, the early 2000s, when they weren't even that bad in the U.S., but these don't happen here. There's been one in, like, the last 50 years, and it's with a knife, and he'd always say, yeah, well, you can't kill people with guns, and you're gonna kill them with knives. And my retort to that was always, like, okay, I'll give you that. Like, there's crazy people everywhere, but how many people are you gonna kill with a knife,
Right.
You might be able to only kill 4 or 5, or with a gun, you can shoot 100 people. And yeah, this guy using, like, gasoline kind of shows that you can't really control. I mean, you can get rid of weapons and all that stuff, but
a crazy person is gonna do crazy.
You can use
stuff,
gasoline, right? Anyone, yeah. What are you gonna do, ID check for gasoline or something, I don't know. But to me, it kind of shows that Japan isn't immune. And I always talk about this, and I think it's a different we had kind of philosophy we had about Japan, where I was a little more naive, thinking it was, like, this safe haven where they don't have a military and they don't get into wars. And to be honest, that was true back when I would have these talks with my dad. But now, you know, they have a civil self-defense force, not an army, but it's pretty much the same thing. And, you know, a lot of these kind of idealistic views of Japan as this really peaceful place where these things don't happen are kind of starting to happen, you know? And it's an interesting time for me as a person who always kind of viewed Japan as a leg up on the rest of the world, you know? Yeah. Kind of thinking, all right, this place where I'm raising my kid now, is it the best place to be doing that, you know? Or somewhere in Scandinavia be better? And I'm, you know, lucky to have the job that I have where I can consider those things.
Yeah.
I don't have to, like, be locked into one place. Yeah, those are kind of my knee-jerk reactions to these things happening a little bit more here.
Yeah.
It's not at all, you know, to the level it is in the U.S. where I fear for my son's safety. I still don't lock my doors at nighttime, for example. But I do wonder what it would breaking point where I start locking my door in my house be, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I've never... It's coming up. You know, I still lock my door.
We're very different. Like
I, I always do that stuff. But, I mean, I think it's just so ingrained into my DNA, you know, from where I grew up.
Yeah, I don't advocate it. It's definitely smart to do that. I did back home, but I just feel that safe here.
Yeah, I think, you know, I think just in general we're safer, you know, but there always are going to be
contest,
crazy, I mean, you know, yeah. I mean, it's there are always going to be crazy people, and you just can't say, like, when somebody's gonna snap. Like, there was a guy that went through our near my home in Tennoji. He went to the Tennoji JR station and he took a baseball bat and he just hit a lady in the back of the head and like seriously hurt her or killed her, I can't remember which. But this was maybe 2 years ago, so this is, you know, I'm still kind of new to
hearing about it.
New to Osaka. And I mean, it was, he was just crazy. He said he didn't like how she was looking at him, you know? And so, you know, you can't control somebody that's, you know, gonna do something that's like psychotic, right? Or just like chaos, you know, out of the norm.
I agree, but I do think it's interesting that there's a time period where that stuff didn't really happen that much. And it's always a question of how much of it gets reported or kept hush-hush and stuff. I know all that.
Yeah.
All those factors are in there. But, yeah, there are certain countries in the world, you know, where that stuff doesn't happen.
Yeah.
So I think there's other... Yeah, you're going to get crazy people, but what caused them to be crazy, you know?
Well, I think the attention. I think the attention that these things get, and then, I mean, which hopefully we're not
contributing
to, right? But I think also... you know, the media responding to these things. And I think also, like, fear for, like, the G20 was, like, crazy. Like, you know, our neighborhood, like, people, some world leaders were staying in Tennoji, and they blocked off the streets. Like, we couldn't even cross it at a crosswalk. And they, all these, you know, black vans went driving by with, like, police escorts and stuff. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, they take safety very serious for, like, a big event like that. But it also gives, you know, people who are a little unhinged, I think it, that kind of instigates things in them, you know? Yeah.
See, I was kind of actually surprised by that, what I would call, like, over security for G20.
Yeah.
I was always considering going to the Olympics and kind of thinking, like, man, Japan is, like, the one place where I don't think, like, the security is, like, what it should be for, like, an event like that.
Yeah.
And I would kind of worry slightly about my safety in Japan. Although, you know, I think Japan is such a safe place, I would almost kind of trust, maybe this is totally wrong, it's just kind of my gut feeling, but I'd almost kind of trust being in a place like the U.S. more, because I just think they have their precautions for that.
Yeah.
In Japan, they just, they're so lucky, or, you know, things are just so good here. For example, like, the Shinkansen, only recently, like, in the last year or two, and I don't know if it's because of the Olympics, is there, like, a guy in the Shinkansen, like, a police officer who rides the Shinkansen now? Last trip was the first time, just this summer.
Yeah.
Like a guy with a gun, or looks like a gun, it could just be a taser or something, who kind of walks up and down, and he checks garbage cans. I just saw him put his hands in garbage cans. This seemed like the most tedious, silly, kind of silly job.
Yeah.
But I was like, oh, that's new, and that's like, it's Japan, like, it's a bit of a reality check for me. Like, Japan isn't this dreamy place anymore, and it's kind of crazy that we've been here for that transition. You know, just in the last 6 years, that's kind of happened. And I don't know what the tipping point is for that, you know? But it is happening where they're kind of catching up in terms of security for the rest of the world.
Yeah, sure. And, I mean, you could always think about that they have, like, a military. The military president is the defense force, right?
Yeah.
But you know, Japan isn't immune to being like near volatile places, you know, sure, that might, you know, it could be in the path of like some foreign conflict, right?
Yeah.
So there's also that concern too, like, you know, right now it's relatively safe and they get along with people, but you never know, you know.
We're just like throwing back to Korea, we were talking about before, like in Korea I know where if I need like a gas mask, or I know where I need to go if North Korea does attack or something like that, I know where to go. Like, it's really obvious there. It's really clear.
Sure.
You know, have you seen those in the subways before?
Yeah, yeah,
show the mask and they say that this is a place that's like a safety zone.
And they sometimes have like the videos like on the, right, like the fancy trains and stuff.
In Japan, I have no clue where I would go or what I would do if that happens here.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, Japan's just as susceptible to being hit by nukes, you know. We had them flown over us many times. It was 2 years ago or last year. Or in Korea, I don't think that's ever happened where they've flown over, you know, Korea. So
yeah,
that to me was like always like a pretty big litmus test. Like, man, yeah, Japan just doesn't. They have been very lucky in the past, and because of that, they don't really have the precautions. But I do think they're kind of getting there now. And yeah, like I said, it feels kind of sad and depressing to me that like this isn't, you know, La La Land day like this.
Yeah,
dream place anymore.
I think anywhere in the world, you know, I mean, you're always at risk of becoming a part of it, like a conflict, or you know, in that case, you know, the world is a smaller place than it's ever been.
But I always, and, I guess, kind of wore it with a sense of pride. Like one of the biggest reasons, like top three reasons why I really loved living here was it didn't have all these things and it didn't need to, and it's this world where that stuff shouldn't have to exist, and this was like a place that had that, you know.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's kind of like the end of that chapter, which is a bit of a bummer, but still very lucky, you know, that it's a super safe place. And I should speak to this a little bit, that I got my wallet, I think, stolen in Shibuya. Did I tell you?
Yeah, we did talk about it. Yeah.
So basically what happened was I was in an Adidas shop right at 109 Shibuya Crossing, which isn't an area I really hang out at anymore, but we were cutting through to go to Harajuku, and my wife just wanted to check out something at Adidas, and that was the closest store. So we went in there, and that morning I had gotten breakfast at a Kyukatsu place, which is not the best breakfast. It's pretty much eating steak for breakfast. And so I just went to that Gyukatsu place, and then I went to this Adidas shop, and I didn't even try on a shirt. I was just kind of holding up to see if it would like fit my shoulders. And I sat down a bag. I just had like a messenger bag, but I sat down and I walked over to a mirror, and I came back, and my wife went to the dressing room, and when she got out, I was like, oh, hey, do you have my bag in there? She's like, no. And then I kind of had a, like, that kind of horrible moment of like, where did I put it?
Yeah.
And just always having the best luck and just knowing I was in Japan and stuff. I totally like didn't sweat it. Until like this place had like 6 or 7 stories. I went up and down each one and asked around, and they were like, no. And then I started to get like, oh no, where is this? And again, I never worried it was stolen or taken. I just thought, what am I gonna find where I put it, you know?
Yeah. And where, like, did,
well,
you leave it?
I was like, well, I've only been to 2 places today. So I kind of just retraced my steps all day. This is the last full day of our trip too. Basically, it's a long, long story, but the short version is I spent like 7 or 8 hours that day just retracing my steps, going back to each shop every couple hours, asking. It was really convoluted. I had to go to the police station, report it missing, which in Japan, you have to get a certificate of something missing to prove it. So like when I had to go to immigration later and get a new resident card, I had to have that police certificate, which they didn't expect me to have. They were like really sad to tell me that I had to have that. I pulled it out and they're like, oh, you got the,
which was, yeah,
like,
thank goodness.
Oh, thank goodness. Yeah. And yeah, it was just such a big headache. And again, that was kind of one of those things again where it was like,
you were surprised.
Japan, yeah, the safe haven place for me where nothing gets stolen. And when I've told friends, they all say, ah, that Shibuya Crossing is not Japan. You know, like that's like a weird
same
place.
Yeah.
I had a lot of people who said, ah, it's probably not a Japanese person who took it, you know? Ultimately, I guess we deemed it as stolen and not lost because it would have been found, you know, at one of those 2 shops, like someone, they would have found it the next day or whatever, and they didn't.
Yeah.
So,
because everybody's lost stuff. Like, I mean, I've lost stuff, you've lost stuff before, and we've always gotten it back.
Always at the shop, or someone turns it in, or
at the nearest Family Mart, right?
Yeah. So, yeah, like a week went by, and, you know, kept calling those shops and stuff. So I was like, yeah, it had to have been stolen. I mean, the joke was kind of on them because I only had $20 in my wallet, so it wasn't that much. Although the day before, I had like $400 cash, so I was so lucky.
Good thing you spent it.
That's right. I should have spent the last 20. Well, I mean, the crazy thing and why it's a bit of a mystery, why I don't think I could say it was clearly stolen, was that I get a call from the Shinjuku Lost and Found, which is like, it's about a 40-minute walk from
Shibuya. Yeah, it's not
two,
exactly
two train stops, super close, one train stop away. And I never went there my whole trip, so it was kind of peculiar, like, why Shinjuku? And they say, yeah, we have this gray bag with a leather wallet inside, and is it yours? And I was like, yeah, that's great. And they're like, can you come get it? And I was like, no, I live in Kobe. And the guy was so quick, like, okay, I'll take it to the post office and send it to you. And I was like,
so they sent it to you?
Call me in English. Cool. They're so happy to send it to me. I hate going to the post office, man. I can't imagine just doing that for some random stranger.
Yeah.
And it was a COD, cash on delivery, which they still have here, which is crazy. That, again, makes me have pride in Japan that you can just order something online and they'll trust that you'll have cash. Yeah. You know, they do charge you $324 to do the service.
Yeah, I'll do it every time though.
Yeah. But anyway, long story short, I get it back and had the $29 still in it. Nothing was touched, everything was there still. So I don't know, why would someone steal it and not at least just take the $20? Maybe they thought they could use the cards, and I canceled them all pretty quickly, so maybe when they found out they couldn't use the cards online, it wasn't, they just threw it in the garbage or threw it on the ground in Shinjuku, which they, where they lived, or their next stop or something.
Yeah. Or maybe they had a change of heart, you know? They were like, their conscience started to like...
I would, rather than getting the wallet, because at that point I put in the 30 or literally 30 or 40 hours of paperwork to get all my cards back and my resident ID back and all that.
So
rather than get the $20 and like the wallet, I kind of just want the story of what happened.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. It's such, I hate that kind of mystery. It's like you lose something in the house and you go crazy, you know?
Oh, it's a horrible feeling, yeah.
As that to the nth degree. So, yeah, I really, really wonder, a bit of a mystery. But in the end, Japan came through and didn't disappoint me in that way because I got it all back. So,
yeah.
That was an interesting experience.
Yeah, yeah, that's a crazy experience, yeah. I'm sorry to hear that stuff.
Oh, yeah.
It sucks,
it worked out in the end, so.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. That's been summer so far. We got a couple of weeks left. We got a secret project in the works that I don't know when we're gonna announce it, but
yeah,
maybe fall time.
Yeah, yeah, we'll get some more of it done and then we'll let everybody know. But yeah, just, you know, continue to listen, continue to subscribe to our podcast, you know, and follow us on everywhere you can find us, you know.
Yeah.
And then as soon as we drop that knowledge, you know, you guys will be first to know. Yeah,
of course. There's a Twitter user who, I don't know, you let me know what you think. Basically, I'll just give his name as a shout out, but he's been writing us a lot lately and saying, like, how do you find things like onsen near a certain area? And I just recommended you go on Google Maps and just, you can type in generic categories like convenience store.
Oh, yeah,
onsen.
Yeah.
You don't have to know the name.
Even today we were talking about that.
Yep, and it will pull up the nearby places. You do have to kind of zoom in again to the area you're in. It'll kind of pull you back out and you have to zoom in again. And then there's a little label that comes up which says,
search this area.
And that's the really key that you could miss. So make sure you do the search this area. And his name is Jordan Wagner, and he just been saying he listens every day, which is pretty awesome. And he was asking about the movies. We talked about some of our favorite Japanese movies.
Right.
We didn't like write down the names, so you could check that Twitter stream if you want to see the names. I wrote them out for him, and he made an episode recommendation. I want to see if you think we'll actually do that, or maybe we just talk about it now, if it's not a full episode.
Uh-huh.
But he said we're such city people and we always talk about cities and stuff that we should do an episode or maybe interview someone who likes hiking, national parks, or camping.
Yeah, like, yeah. I think we could go into that in the future. Yeah, it's really hard for us since like we don't have we don't have the gear and stuff. I actually like camping and I like going to the hiking and stuff like that. I don't do it that often. Like, it's not something that, like, I'm compelled to do.
That's like, not, like, our know, favorite thing. I think we both like it. We just don't love it.
Yeah. But, yeah, I think we could do something about the countryside, and I think we could do something about hiking.
Yeah, check out Aojishima that I recorded with Albert. He's, you know, of our kind of crew who's been on the show. He's definitely the biggest nature lover out of all of us.
Yeah, maybe we could get him on for that.
So he would be one I'd want to have on for that. We went to Aojishima, which is a remote island and where he kind of, his family grew up. And he talks about that a bit. So.
And you and I haven't been on like a hiking trip or something. Yeah, so maybe this summer we can get around to doing that and then record a podcast while we're on a hike.
Yeah.
Because I wouldn't mind doing that. It's summer right now, so it's not the best time to go out in the countryside.
Yeah.
But But you never know.
Yeah,
we might make some time for that.
Yeah, thank you for that suggestion. And I think it's true. I think it's we're pretty transparent in saying that, you know.
Yeah, we're city people. Yeah, definitely.
But I do think one of the big draws of Japan compared to other neighboring countries is the nature is the best here in Asia. So, and with places that have first world kind of cities, I think they did a really good job of preserving nature too.
Yeah. I mean, from some of the videos I've seen, like tour videos and stuff, like it's some of the most picturesque places that I've ever seen, you know?
Yeah, just going down a bus ride, you know, to one city to another, if you're lucky enough to see the countryside, it's pretty great. And I think one quick kind of aside, again, throwing back to Korea, people here kind of proudly say they're from Inaka, or, you know, they take pride in like the countryside, or they like the countryside. And I met this girl in Korea, a younger girl, who just kind of struck up a conversation at a vinyl bar. And she said she's from Daegu. And I just made a joke, because in Seoul, you know, Seoul is a city of like 25 million people. Daegu is like a million or a million and a half, but she's in Seoul now. So I just joked, and I was like, oh, you're a country girl, huh? And her face was kind of like a little bit weird about that. I thought, oh, maybe the joke just didn't land. And then my Korean buddy after, was like, oh, that was pretty rude what you said. And I was like, what do you mean? First of all, I was mistaken. I thought she was a transplant and like living in Seoul now, but she was just visiting there for a couple of days.
From Daegu.
So I made fun of her, you know, area she's still living in, rather than someone who left that area or something, right?
Sure.
But I feel like in Japan, that would fly. Like you say, like, oh, you're like, you knock on, like, yeah, man, it's awesome, or something like that. And she was kind of like shamed, you know, by like being from the small area. Yeah. I think it kind of shows you the just kind of philosophy different of that kind of appreciation or kind of love for nature here in Japan. Yeah. Where like in Korea, generalizing, but again, yeah, people do kind of want to be in Seoul, I think.
Most people. Well, I would say Daegu is like still very city.
Kobe. Yeah.
But just, I mean, once again, there's no Hongdae, you know, in Daegu. Like, there's no reason to go like anywhere other than Seoul, you know, if you're going to go to, I mean,
cities.
There are reasons to go, but maybe not if you're going to take like a trip to Korea, right?
Yeah.
Like if you're living there, it's worth going to like the different places to see the nuances, but you're not going to get the nuance from like a quick trip to Daegu or, you know, what are some of the other suburbs, you know, Gyeonggi, most of Gyeonggi, I guess.
Busan's worth your time.
Yeah.
But,
that might be one exception.
Yeah. Jeju too. Anyway. So this has been a more personal episode for the, long time listeners, and hope you enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Have a song, give a song. What do you want to go
on? Well, I'll do housekeeping first. So first of all, you know, thanks for listening, and don't forget to rate and subscribe on, you know, all the podcasting platforms. We don't care where you rate and subscribe to us. So, you know, just, whichever place is best for you.
Mm.
And then you can find us all over the internet at Japan 2.0, spell out point. And that's about it.
All right, can I do the song?
Yeah.
All right, so this is a Japan 2.0 kind of marriage of two groups you featured before but never together. Buffalo's Daughter had a kind of remix album that came out on our 20th anniversary a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
And when I go to Spotify, like, that's the first one that comes up, so I didn't mean to listen to that, and I kind of realized quickly, I'm like, hey, wait a second, this new rock sounds new. And it's one of their classic songs called, most people either like New Rock or Great Five Lakes are kind of the two big songs, like, from Buffalo's Daughter. Buffalo's Daughter, in case you don't know, is like one of the 90s kind of classic Shibuya K / I always felt like they were on Grand Royal.
They were on Grand Royal.
The Beastie Boys label.
I think that's how most people know them, is because they were on the Grand Royal label.
But the reason I love this particular version, I would actually say it's better than the original, is it features Chinza Dopeness on it, and Roy. And there might be one or two other people I don't actually know their names on there.
Yeah, but some of our favorite rappers.
Yeah, he's great. And then it's a long song, so there's like these weird droney kind of rock guitar solos, which, even for me as a fan, sometimes it's a bit much, and when they rap over those, it adds a lot of new substance, I think.
Yeah.
So they've done a good job of keeping the good parts before, but improving the bad parts. So
I love Great Five Lakes, but it's like a 6-minute song.
Yeah. They're kind of like that. So this whole, man, I wish this had a vinyl release. I guess we got to look out. But the Great Five Lakes remix is really good too. So.
Yeah. Just a quick aside, but related. I found the Havana Exotica CD. Mm. Which is a lot of members of Buffalo's Daughter, before they became Buffalo's Daughter. Yeah. I've been trying to track down that CD. I found that CD.
It's awesome.
And it's a very unique...
Vinyl or CD?
It's just CD.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, I don't think they did vinyl. Yeah. They have like a 10-inch, it's like impossible to find. I've never seen it anywhere.
Buffalo's Daughter is touring right now, like in Japan.
Are they really?
Yeah.
They're
looking pretty old, but yeah, that's good. They're doing their thing.
But no, it's good that they're still doing it. You know, they've been around since the 90s, so yeah. Like, I mean, everybody that's been around. I have bad news for you, David. We're getting old. Yeah.
The club they're playing only holds like 200-300 people in Kobe, so a pretty small crowd.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah. Are they coming soon?
I can't remember. We'll have to look.
Yeah, I still got some time in my summer, you know, right. I'd like to do some shows if we can.
Mm.
All right. Once again, thanks for listening, and till next time.
See ya.
Peace.
Go!